you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
How's it, everybody? Welcome back to, I almost said Game Nights, but it's actually the Command Zone. I'm your host, Josh Lee Kwai. How's it?
And I'm DJ.
Wow, that just
that was a rough intro, Josh.
That just couldn't have gone better.
Did you just come back from vacation or something?
It's almost like I'm jet-lagged. We're just going to go with it. Okay, so we just did our report card episode for Commander 2018, and sort of in the midst of doing that, DJ and I were like asking some questions. It was a moment to be reflective about the format and like, what do Commander players want? What do we wish was in here? What does the format need?
Exactly. We were kind of discussing, well, did they hit what we need? Did they push the boundaries? And then we found ourselves asking, what would we do?
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about our Commander format wish lists today. And that's like, what kind of spells, effects, what tools that don't exist now do we wish existed? You know, what does the format need from a new card perspective? We're going to be putting our...
I had a long wish list, Josh. We had to cut it down a little bit. That's why we're bringing you the most relevant wish list cards that we have.
Yeah, we're going to be putting on our game designer hats a little bit. Spoiler alert, we're not game designers. Okay, before we get into all of that, we need to talk about our sponsors. Of course, cardkingdom.com/commandzone. If you use that affiliate link when you order your Magic cards, singles, products, anything at all, you really are supporting this podcast. You're supporting Game Nights. You know, you're going to order those that stuff anyway. If you use the affiliate link, when you do, you really are keeping the lights on around here, and we super appreciate it. Also, a big thanks to Ultra Bro, who's been a great sponsor for us for a very long time. I know a lot of people have been asking about the wall scrolls that we've seen in Game Nights that we see behind DJ there. They are, at the time of this recording, like going to come out pretty soon. I don't know the exact date, but keep an eye on it. Ask your LGS about them so that they can, you know, ask Ultra Pro and get them in stock. They are super, super cool, and you definitely want those on your wall. And the final way to support all of our content is directly. If you go to patreon.com/commandzone, you can contribute directly, and you can do things like see Game Nights before anyone else. A lot of our patrons got the Last Stand playmat for free as one of the rewards for being a patron. Thank you to everyone of our patrons. You really are the heart and soul of our content. And another benefit is every single episode, we call out one lucky patron. Call out, shout out. Anyway, this episode is dedicated to Damien Savorino. Savorino, I'm going to go with that. Savorgino. Damien, I'm sorry we butchered your last name. I'm really not
Damien,
sure how to say
that. You actually have an awesome... When you can't pronounce your last name, it means that it's awesome. My last name sucks.
My last name must be awesome because no one can ever
exactly.
pronounce it.
So. It's so interesting.
All right. Yeah. Let's get into our main topic right away here. I want to say, first of all, we don't like bans. Bannings kind of suck.
Yeah, I don't like banning either. And when you're talking about a wish list, when you're talking about finding cards we need to balance the format, one easy way to balance something is to ban the card that's causing the problem. And we don't like that solution.
I think one of the big draws to Commander as a format is that you can play your cards. With very few exceptions, if you have a card, you can play it. And I think that's one of the great things about it. And one of the things that drew me to it when I came back to Magic, I was like, oh, I have this box of old cards. I can still play all this stuff? Yes, you can. So we're going to tackle this from a perspective of let's not ban stuff. Instead, let's create some checks and balances on the stuff that maybe is a little bit too powered or is just well positioned in the format for whatever reason.
And WotC's been doing that too. I think that they also ascribed the same philosophy. So it might
for Commander.
Yeah. It might be the easy solution to just like, well, just ban it if it's a problem. But no, we want to go with the more complicated, but we think the better solution, which is make new cards.
Now, you put a little disclaimer here.
I did.
Do you want to read it?
Yeah,
it's absolutely true.
It's totally true. Okay, so we're putting on our game designer hats and we're talking about some mock cards. And these are basically examples of cards from our wish list, okay? These could be ridiculous and completely unbalanced, and that's okay. Okay? The reason why we're doing this is because we're trying to point out what we need to have in this format, and we can change the mana cost or change exactly what it is, but we're trying to get across the need for this type of card.
Yeah.
We're more pointing out a problem rather than suggesting the exact solution in the mock card we talk about.
Yeah, we're going to sort of make up some cards and say something like this. Now, not this, but as Mark Rosewater would design this, as Gavin Verhey would design this.
Better people will take this idea and run with it, but what it does is highlight the problem, highlight the need.
Yeah, and sort of point towards a general direction of like, oh, here's maybe a way of solving it. Okay, so let's talk about our number one problem. We're gonna sort of tackle these as far as like, here's the problem, and here's what we think a solution could be as far as like a card that might exist or a group of cards that might be able to come into existence to kind of put the checks and balances like we said. So what's our first problem?
Our first problem is everyone's problem. It's Cyclonic Rift.
Yeah, Cyclonic Rift it's a little too good.
It is.
Yeah, it's good for a bunch of reasons. Obviously, the fact that it only affects your opponents and not you.
It's great in multiplayer. It's instant speed.
That's a huge one. If it was sorcery speed, I think
it'd be more balanced.
Oh, I think it'd be totally fine, and it wouldn't even be on the radar as one of the. It would definitely not be like the second most played card in the format.
Yeah, you have to commit too much mana to actually deploy it, and on sorcery speed, then even though you can, it'll still be powerful. It wouldn't be as, instant speed is insane.
Yeah, it doesn't hose people in the way too of like, they're going to get their turn to recast their stuff. If you use Cyclonic Rift at the end of someone's turn, a lot of times they discard a bunch of cards and don't get to redeploy. That's part of the reason it's so powerful.
It feels awful.
You're often the first one to redeploy it. For those that don't know what Cyclonic Rift is, it's one in a blue and you bounce one permanent. But if you play its overload cost, which means you pay six in a blue, then you bounce all non-land permanents you don't control back to their owner's hands. And so in like regular constructed formats, that's mostly fine and not even overpowered at all. It doesn't see modern play or anything like that because the fact is it's not card advantage.
It's still powerful. I mean, you can see it in cubes. You can see it in certain things where you are picking the most powerful cards in 1v1. But it's powerful because it's flexible. In our format, it's just straight up game winning.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd feel bad if you cost it for two.
Oh, yeah. You almost never do it, but every once in a while you can just to save your life or whatever. Someone's like, if Craig, you know, pumps something with Infect.
Oh, Craig.
Yeah, then all of a sudden you'll use their Cyclonic Rift
that
way.
Doing Craig things.
But it is very, very powerful. Now, they have printed some cards that are sort of... Well, one in particular for sure was pointed at Cyclonic Rift.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple other cards I'd say that are sort of maybe not pointed at Cyclonic Rift when they designed it, but incidentally good against it.
This is why I like starting with this card because it points out this whole process. We weren't the only ones that noticed a problem with Cyclonic Rift. WotC did too. And then they printed a card directed at it.
Right. So that card is Teferi's Protection. This came out in Commander 2017. It's kind of the big new card from that set that really took off and has become a staple in white decks. It's two and a white. I'm doing this off of memory for an instant, and it says that you and all of your permanents phase out.
Can't be interacted with.
Right.
Which means you can't get bounced.
It means your stuff can't get bounced. It does incidentally save you from
combat damage.
Some combos, not all, because it's instant speed, and a lot of times the combos just continue over the top of it and kill you because of the way the stack works. But really, Cyclonic Rift is a big one where they Cyclonic Rift, you phase out. Then on your next turn, you phase back in, and all your stuff's there, and then you get them. And even if they do it on the end step before their turn, you can do it because then they go to their turn and they're like, uh-oh, all your stuff's going to come back.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I just used my Cyclonic Rift. It's pretty effective at that, I would say. The other two we have written down are less effective. They're very similar cards. They're Ghost Way and Eerie Interlude. They basically blink all your creatures, and then your creatures come back at the next end step. Now, the big reason I think these are way worse is it only does creatures.
Yes. That so, is true.
Yeah, so your enchantments, your artifacts, your planeswalkers, they still would get bounced by Cyclonic Rift. It would only save creatures. But those are sort of answers.
Yeah, they're sort of answers.
Yeah.
So my idea is basically finding a way to have stuff go back to your hand, but then be able to immediately redeploy it.
Right.
And so
you, I like how you even named your cards when you,
I did
you
name
really
my card.
Put your game designer hat on. I did not name any of my cards. So DJ's cards will have names, but not mine.
Mine was Lingering Essence. So like you have a creature, you have a thing on the battlefield and it's like, it got bounced to your hand, but their essence belongs on the battlefield.
That's actually really good.
So you can like recast it, out of speed, so instant speed, and for no mana cost. And then we can decide whether it's like creatures or all permanents or something like that.
Wait, did you read the card that you wrote specifically?
Specifically? Sure, I'll read it. If a creature was returned to your hand this turn, you may cast the creature without paying its mana cost. I also was contemplating whether it could be permanent, if a permanent were returned to your hand. And I was also thinking about you could play that card. So even if they bounced more than one land, you could theoretically play all of those permanents.
If they capsize you.
Exactly. If they capsize lock you or something like that. Again.
So this would be an instant and it would allow you to redeploy your cards immediately.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So they bounce everything and then you let them have their turn. And then you play this, or you can play it in response, whatever. And then you can immediately redeploy your entire board and then gain advantage from enter the battlefield effects or stuff like that, or cast effects.
Even. Or at the very least, just maintain parity with that effect.
Yeah.
I like that.
This is a rebuild type thing. I'm gonna be able to rebuild, and you won't expect it, and it'll be faster than my other opponents that just got board wiped by the Cyclonic Rift. You, on the other hand, must really hate Cyclonic Rift, Josh.
I mean, I like it. I played it in a lot of decks. I think it's very, very powerful. I think that I would rather punish it. We talked about this in a past episode. And so my card, I don't have a name for it, would be something like a 3-mana 2/2 artifact creature with flash. And it would say, if a spell or ability an opponent controls would return a permanent you control to your hand, make a token that's a copy of that permanent instead. And that would be like, hey, if you want to capsize lock me... or whatever. Capsize Lock's not quite as good because they're doing it one at a time.
But again, this is targeted at Cyclonic Rift. So really, if they Cyclonic Rift, it's a blowout.
I double my board or whatever.
Insane.
There are problems with this, obviously, because you don't want to make it so somebody Cyclonic Rifts and there's four players, and then it just makes one of the other players win.
So because that's then kind of the Cyclonic Rift made a Kingmaker, essentially.
Big time. It's a little too powerful. But I would like something that punishes the Cyclonic Rift player. This was just an idea I had. I like your card, but I don't think it should be in blue. Blue is the one color that actually doesn't have a problem with Cyclonic Rift.
It feels flavorful with the flash. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
Is there anything else?
Green has flash.
Green has flash.
And green is actually the color
flash
that probably...
Flash without mana cost?
I don't know, without mana cost.
That feels so blue. I put it in blue because it had flash and did it without mana cost.
But blue doesn't need help with Cyclonic Rift. They have Swan Song. They've got... Force of Will, they've got Mana Drain, they've got regular Counterspell. They're the one color that has no problem with Cyclonic Rift. They have tons of answer to it.
Right now, we're experiencing what I'm sure play design experiences too, where they're like, I want to make this type of card, but this color doesn't need that help.
Right. So red, green, I think, is the big one that needs it the most.
Probably
but
put
white,
this on a land, an activated ability.
Yeah, that could do it. Kind of like Homeward Path-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that Cyclonic Rift is a big boogeyman in the format and probably needs a little bit of checks and balances. I don't want to take it out. I just want to make it so that it's a little dangerous to cast it. So you might have it in your hand and be like, geez, if they have that one card, I'm going to be hosed. I should at least think about it.
I agree.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's go to the next problem.
It's actually Cyclonic Rift related, the next problem.
Right.
Yeah.
So, go ahead. You put this one down. So I'll
let you read this down. I actually feel like I think that blue needs more board control options. I feel like I'm forced to play Cyclonic Rift if I'm in blue.
I mean, I mean, you are because it's so good, though, right?
I don't know. There's a lot of good cards that I choose not to play, and there are certainly good cards that we all choose not to play.
But you're saying because my other options for a similar effect are so limited.
Yeah, exactly. Because right. I think there's a huge gap in between Cyclonic Rift and the next blue board control.
Okay.
I think that there's a gigantic gap there. And maybe if there's something else that works, people might be like, oh, you're the kind of person that plays Cyclonic Rift. The same way they say that when they say, oh, you're playing Mass Land Destruction.
Okay.
We have a social contract.
Sure.
And sometimes that social contract extends to many different archetypes and many different types of cards.
Right.
And, but when we don't have the tools that we need to,
or we don't have a good alternatives.
Exactly. Then we might be like, okay, well, I guess you have to play Cyclonic Rift.
Interesting. Okay. So what are you thinking here?
I'm thinking of a card called Rift Squall.
It's another good name. It's just too blue.
By the way, I also made a different type of counter in here. Listen,
that one's like I taught a computer to read Magic card names, and then I asked it to create a blue. Yeah,
exactly,
and it came up with Riskwall. Okay,
yeah, four blue for an instant. Instant is very important. Okay, mm-hmm. And it has multi kicker for blue or something. For each time Rift Squall was kicked, put an anchor counter on target permanent. Return every non-land permanent without an anchor counter on it to its owner's hands.
Oh, so you can save some stuff, and you can kind of, oh.
For seven mana.
It's not just your opponent's control. You can like save a certain amount of your
stuff. So for example, like for six mana, everything, all non-land permanents go. Okay, for seven mana, the same price as Cyclonic Rift, you can save your key permanent,
one of your things. Permanents.
And then
for eight mana, two.
And then if you have a lot of blue, you can sort of
make a Cyclonic Rift out of that for like 27 mana.
Yes.
Got it. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I like that. I didn't create a card for this category because I disagree with the premise. Mm-hmm. I think that blue is just fine in the area and doesn't need any help. I've got Evacuation, Whelming Wave, Devastation, Tide, Sunder, Capsize, tons of ways. I just don't feel ever that blue is really hurting. And if you didn't want to play Cyclonic Rift, and in fact, I have some decks that don't have it purposely because they're my lower powered decks. And I don't feel like blue is ever like, oh no, the board's full. Whatever should I do? It has plenty of options. I feel that's how I feel.
I think that number one, Evacuation is underplayed.
It's so good.
And it's very good. And
it's better
speed.
Than Wrath of God.
And I, it's pretty good. But I think that there's a huge gap even between Cyclonic Rift and Evacuation. And then as soon as you go to the sorcery speed stuff, especially because it all costs like six mana.
Whelming Wave costs four.
Oh, it's based on your islands, right?
No, it doesn't Krakens. Bounce Krakens, Leviathans, all your
but
stuff.
But it's still sorcery speed.
Right. It's just like Wrath of God.
Yeah.
Day of Judgment. Those cards get played.
They do.
Yeah.
You're right. I also think that that's underplayed. My favorite blue board wipe is Ixodron.
Oh, Ixodron, sweet.
That's my favorite board wipe. I think that these are really far away from Cyclonic Rift, and I think Wrath of God is really far away from Cyclonic Rift,
too. That's more of a comment on how good Cyclonic Rift is than... Because if it was in any other color, it would be far and away better than all their other board wipes.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I also think that Wrath of God is kind of a limiting card that is a little bit meh, and that other board wipes are seeing more play.
Oh yeah, Wrath of God isn't even the most played board wipe, but you can compare them to Toxic Deluges and stuff of the world, and I still think it compares. Whelming Wave is just one more mana, does basically the same thing, gets around Indestructible in the same way. I think it's comparable. Devastation Tide is another one. You could Miracle it, and it's also just five. So, I don't know. I disagree with the premise, I guess.
I think that the power of being able to replay cards is really, really key. I also think that a lot of the times the cards or the decks that play board wipes, like the white decks that play board wipes, they're not committing a bunch to the board and then board wiping. But when you're returning all non-land permanents, especially in blue, you're returning almost all of your mana ramp. You're actually setting yourself back more than you think, even if you don't have a board presence. And so I think instant speed is really important in order to basically be able to rebuild and give it a little bit of an advantage. I want something more powerful than Whelming Wave and Evacuation. Actually, Evacuation's okay, but I want something a little bit more powerful than Whelming Wave. Whelming Wave was at instant speed. I actually think that
I think
they
that's
would
what
start
causes the problem.
Reaching in towards fixing the problem.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I mean, we're going to have to agree to disagree. Yeah. I think blue is the most powerful color in the format. It needs no help. Okay. Here's the next problem. This one we can agree on. There's no werewolf commander.
We got pretty specific right here.
Yeah, but it's a problem. Why is there not a werewolf commander?
I like how we talked about like one of the most important cards. We're talking about Cyclonic Rift. It's played all over the place. It's a really key thing. And then we're like, werewolves, guys, rawr!
Werewolves are cool.
they're very cool. I think we're going to get it, but we don't have one now.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to do it at some point. They did... Ulric of the Crawlin' Horde.
Yes.
Which is like a sad... I literally
Josh literally put, just next to it, no description. On the outline, he just put sad.
Yeah. It's sad in so many ways. I'm sad about the card. The card is sad. Like, it's just, it has nothing to do with werewolves. It's not a werewolf lord. It just happens to be a legendary creature that is a werewolf, but it doesn't allow you or enable a werewolf deck. This is something that could be super unique. A lot of people would be, you know, really excited about, including myself. Yeah. And I think that's something that the format needs and wants. And this is another way for us to demonstrate. We're not just going to be all serious about the really powerful and balancing the format competitively. This
we
is
want cool stuff too.
Also about like, yeah, we want cool things. So, okay.
Do you know what's interesting, John? I'm going to read mine and then you can read yours.
Yeah.
We came up with a similar idea for what needed to happen to make werewolves good.
It is pretty interesting. So what happened too, I want to describe our process a little bit, is that DJ and I, before I left for Europe on vacation, we came up with the topic. So we knew what we were going to talk about. And we just said, okay, come up with some cards, come up with some ideas and problems and how you'd solve them. And I'll do the same. And then we'll come back and we'll put our ideas together. So we totally, you know, separate of each other, came up with all this stuff.
We kind of knew that that werewolf was floating around there a little bit, but we had no idea about the cards. Yeah. So I came up with Sven. I like the name Sven. Sven, Canid Mentor. 3 red green for a werewolf.
How much time did you spend on the name part of it?
Not very much time.
We should literally hire, like, this guy should get hired as like a flavor text
I'm available for hire.
Yeah.
Yes, I am available.
You should be like James Pianca we've had on the show a couple times. Okay, sorry.
I'm going to focus on the activated ability because this has an activated ability. 1 green red, transform all non-token creatures you control. Face down creatures are 2/2 wolves.
So this would flip over your werewolves.
This would literally transform everything, including non-werewolf cards, and then those would be 2/2 wolves.
Interesting.
So I think that this would be really cool because you could flip back and forth your werewolves over and over again. I didn't talk about the werewolf side of this, but ultimately I think the most important part is the ability to be in control of transforming with your commander.
Yeah, I think that's a big reason that werewolves are not good in the format, is because the way that they're all templated, which is like if your opponent casts 2 or more spells, they sort of flip. It's just too hard to keep your werewolves on the side you want, because with so many players, they can always kind of flip it to the whatever's the worst for you. And so I think that's really, the werewolf deck needs its commander to control the flipping in some way.
I like the tension too of like they're flipped all different ways, and you might even have some creatures that aren't even werewolves at all. And then you activate this and then you literally are like, I'm going to flip them all over. Some flip back to humans. Other ones flip back to this. You even create some wolves.
Yeah. That's really interesting actually. Cause if I play a werewolf after I've done this flip thing, now that one's on the human side and the other ones. And it's like, do I want to? Yeah, that is interesting. Okay. So here's my card. I did not name it. On the human side, it says wolf and werewolf creatures you control get +2/+2. And you can pay green and red to transform another target werewolf. And then it has the normal clause. If an opponent casts 2 spells on a turn, it flips over.
I thought on the front side if they no spells.
Yeah, sorry, no spells. Sorry.
Yeah.
And so it flips over. So it itself cannot control itself flipping. It can only transform other werewolves.
That's cool.
But then once it's on the other side, it says, if a werewolf you control would transform, you may choose not to transform it instead. That includes itself. So now you are in control.
Very cool.
And it says, whenever a werewolf you control transforms, create a 2/2 wolf creature token. And then you can pay green and red to transform target werewolf. So it can transform itself back into a human. So you can be like, oh, I want the anthem now. Flip it back over.
Wait a second, Josh. So Josh and I, independent of each other, said we need something that transforms and is an activated ability that does it. And then also we wanted synergies with wolves.
And we wanted some kind of tension in that you created tension of like, oh, but it's fun to flip all of them.
Yeah.
So I have to figure out, I got to really sequence my plays in the correct way. And mine is like, you don't have control over one side of the flipping of the commander. And it has an anthem effect for the tokens it creates on opposite sides. So you have to really, sort of negotiate, not necessarily politically. I just mean like sequencing of how you're going to get it flipped to the right side when you want it, get the anthem effect. Once you get a bunch
of
tokens.
There's a cool threat of activation there too. You're swinging in and you're like, all right, I will turn my werewolf over. And now they have +2/+2.
And it creates, it's cool. And maybe it creates a token or whatever. Yeah. So again, I don't know what that card would be costed and what its power and toughness would
exactly.
be.
Exactly. But here's the thing is that this is the interesting process is we're like, hey, we need a werewolf. And then in doing this, we came up with a lot of things that we actually needed, concrete ideas. We, of course, don't have the specifics together, and some of these might be ridiculous. Like, you might point out in the comments, it's like, one of those is going to be awful because of this synergy. Yeah,
that's or it's going to immediately go infinite with this card. And that's why R&D has such a tough job. Yeah. And we right now have an easy job because we just get to throw it into the ether and go like... Something like this, hey,
you
but
just
better.
Do all the hard work.
Okay.
We're going to tell you what you want and you build it.
This is something that you pointed out as a problem that I definitely agree with, but mm-hmm. I hadn't really thought about until now. So go ahead, I'll let you read it.
So what I did is I kind of thought in my mind about what decks exist in other formats that don't exist in Commander. And one...
Or at least aren't very good.
Yeah. This one might... This is Burn that we're talking
Jimmy
about.
Jimmy has one. It's
Jimmy has a Burn deck?
A Neheb one, but it's not that great.
That's a Neheb deck. That's not a Burn deck. Anyway.
No. It's literally like he built his Neheb deck.
Does he have Lightning
so that
Bolt in there?
It only has Burn spells. It's like,
wow.
It's fireballs
okay.
and stuff.
Okay, okay. Like, respect.
It doesn't win, though. Mostly because he doesn't draw
burn,
mana. Okay.
Burn is... this is another problem. Burn is prevalent in all of these other formats, and it's cool and interesting and fun to play, and it just is not very good in Commander. And it doesn't translate well because every other format, we can grab cards from them and use it for ourselves. And Burn doesn't work like that because we have 40 life and in other formats, they have 20 life.
Also, they have one opponent.
Yeah.
So you have
even worse.
So you have to do 20 damage in a normal format. In our format, you have to do 120 damage. Yeah, it's just, it doesn't scale well.
Exactly.
Into our format.
It doesn't
yeah.
scale well. So I was thinking of a commander that could help scale Burn so that it ends up being a viable strategy. I'm actually going to read you a real card. This card exists. It's called Ember Maw Hellion. 3 red for a 4/5. If another red source you control would deal damage to a permanent or player, it deals that much damage +1 to that permanent or player instead.
Okay. So
this actually
this
exists.
This is a card that exists, and you're going to kind of riff off of this ability.
Yeah. Okay. And so this is not outside. This is not some weird, crazy thing outside of imagination. We can have a card that literally multiplies damage.
Okay.
And so
let's see your card.
Yeah. My card is Ember Channeler. 1 red for a creature. This is going to be a human wizard, and it doesn't matter what it is. It's like a 1/1. Okay, Ember Channeler. Okay, if another red source you control would deal damage to a permanent player, it deals that much damage +1/+2. We can balance it however we want. Instead, I do think that you need to have this creature have some sort of evasion or some sort of ability to defend itself. And so I said, discard a card, maybe at random, and Ember Channeler gains indestructible until end of turn. So basically, it's a commander that can come down early, be somewhat protected, and make Burn work.
Mm, interesting. I do like the idea of scaling the damage at sort of a flat rate.
Yeah.
Just to give it a little extra oomph. Yeah. 1 doesn't feel like enough, though.
It probably isn't. We probably need... But we have to balance it because it can't be something crazy. Because
otherwise Pyrohemia becomes insanity.
I know. Or Legacy players start playing it.
Oh, that's a really good point. Well, you make it a 5-drop.
But if you make it a 5-drop, then it doesn't fulfill the role of Burn, I think. I think this needs to be low cost to come down early, so then you can start playing Burn spells rather than waiting to play your, six mana, if it's on 5, how many 6-mana Burn spells are there?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So it needs to come out early.
There's a tension here.
You've got to create, the Legacy thing's not something I thought about, but yeah, you have to create it at a rate or do something about it that
just imagine if it added
it doesn't
two
get
or
played
three,
in Legacy.
Just imagine if it added 2 or 3. I think Legacy players and add protection. I think Legacy players would play that.
If it added 1, because Burn decks are already viable. If it's like a 1-mana...
Legacy Burn is very viable.
Yeah, 1-1. Like, maybe you have to take off the indestructible part.
Okay, we're getting into something we don't want to do, which is making the perfect card.
Yeah,
we want to point out flaws and possible solutions.
Okay, so here's what I had, and I thought it could be on a creature... a legendary creature, but I'm not sure the sizing or what its mana cost.
Yeah.
But you make a good point about... being careful of the Legacy thing, and I accidentally solved that a little bit in this.
Oh, so, good.
So let's say it was a 2-mana 2/2, and it just said, if a red source you control would deal damage to an opponent, it deals that much damage to each opponent instead.
That's good. It multiplies the burnout. Do you think that would make burn viable if a lightning bolt turned into three to each player?
It's 9 damage for 1 mana.
It's pretty. I mean, it's that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, you still have to string together a lot, but you...
But still, so that's what that solves is the multiplayer aspect, but yeah. It still doesn't address the idea that you still have to go from 20 instead of 20 to zero, from 40 to zero.
Correct, but you have 40 life also, so you have more time to do it.
That's true.
I think that is sort of evening in and of itself. And then we're not running into the legacy problem. There is a card that burn players wish had was a legendary.
I totally wish this too.
Yeah, this is what I was bringing up on my phone, by the way. So this is a card that may make burn more viable if they had this type of effect on a legendary. You want to just throw it?
I do. Josh, you're going to wait for me. You're like, you really want to throw it there.
I'm like, you know, the sound. We just, oh, hit the lens. Nice work. Okay. It's Soulfire Grandmaster. This is the card I think that a lot of people who would like burn to work wish was a legendary creature. It's a 1 and a white for a 2/2. It's not legendary. It's a human monk. It has lifelink. It says instant and sorcery spells you control have lifelink. And then you can pay 2 and then 2 hybrid blue-red. So either 2 and 2 blue, 2 and 2 red, 2 a blue and a red. And it says the next time you cast an instant or sorcery spell from your hand this turn, put that card into your hand instead of into your graveyard as it resolves. This is a really interesting card that might make burn viable in that one of burn's other problems is I cast lightning bolts, regardless of how much damage it does, the card, it's just a card gone. If I go to your face, it's just gone. And most commander games,
it's irrelevant until that lightning bolt brings you from 3 to 0.
Yes. And a lot of commander games are sort of won by card advantage, and burn naturally is not a card advantage type of a strategy. But this ability to put it back in your hand could sort of make it so burn could win an attrition war, at least has a chance.
And I think we need to, again, tweak this kind of stuff because Soulfire Grandmaster, people aren't playing it and imagining like, oh, I'm going to play Lightning Bolt. They're thinking about playing Time Walk effects.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, and,
correct.
And like basically taking all the turns. Correct.
You have to change it so that.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I've heard burn players be like, oh, I'd like to build a burn deck around this card.
Absolutely.
Okay. The next problem is related. And I think the next two are sort of all in the same, I don't know, the same category, which is kind of that, like, when we went to a multiplayer format with 40 life, a couple of strategies kind of naturally took it in the gut. And how can we bring those strategies into the viable category? Mm-hmm. Where, like, we don't want to make them the best strategy. You don't want to make it so burn's just better than everything else. You just want to make it so burn could be played and have a chance to win.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next problem is aggro needs help. Aggro strategies in general are just weaker. We've talked about this a lot on the show. Voltron is an aggro strategy. But even like Infect, as much as people get mad about it when they see it, Infect decks almost never win the game. They often will knock out a player, but they just don't have enough gas to get there in the end.
And the same thing can be said for a lot of other aggro strategies. You might be coming back and say, I have an aggro deck and it's great, but it might not have the lasting power and your play group can easily answer it. They're like, oh, I guess I can't play the 6-mana board wipe. I'll play Whelming Wave instead or Propaganda.
Yeah.
There's so many answers.
So that's a reason why I think it's a problem. To me, this one, I feel like, again, we're going to an existing thing that Magic already has and just trying to bring it into your command zone, kind of. I think Monarch is the answer to this. Because aggro decks are dealing combat damage, they're dealing it early. What they tend to do is run out of gas and just can't get there. And Monarch feels like the perfect incentive and reward for an aggro deck and creates the type of a game that an aggro deck wants where people are swinging each other trying to grab that crown.
Yeah, you're always attacking and you get the Monarch when you deal combat damage to an opponent. That's when you steal the Monarch back. And if you are creating a board presence, you're less likely to lose the Monarch, giving yourself a really easy form of card advantage that plays into the aggro strategy.
And the Monarch, for those that don't know, it was invented for Conspiracy 2, and it's what is it, an emblem, a token?
Yeah, it's a token.
It's a thing you get.
It's an emblem.
Yeah, there are cards that say when you play this, you become the Monarch. And once the Monarch's on the table, what happens is whoever deals combat damage to the Monarch then becomes the Monarch. They take the crown. So one person has the crown at all time, and whoever has the crown gets to draw an additional card on their end step. So you've got your own personal Howling Mine. It's just one extra card per turn if you're the Monarch, but you can lose it anytime somebody baps you with combat damage.
I love the Monarch. You love the Monarch too,
I love it a lot. And yeah. I really, really wish it had been invented when Commander was invented, because I feel like the entire format could be changed by it. To me, I've always compared it to the blinds in poker, where if you're a poker player, you understand that there's a forced bet that happens. And if you've ever played poker at like a home game where they don't play with blinds or something,
or they don't up the blinds,
then what happens is there's no incentive for action to happen in the game. And so what that ends up happening, and this happens in a lot of Commander games, is it's very passive. It's easy to fold because you don't have anything that you're risking at any time. And so you just wait for the best hands and play those, and it's pretty boring.
It's easy to hold up mana and hold back, keep your creatures back, be more defensive rather than swing out, because
what's your reward for swinging? Yeah. So here's my idea. Maybe there's a partner commander, but it's somehow worded so that it can only pair with a creature that is only red or white.
Because you want to limit, you say aggro is a problem. I can't just give this cool Monarch thing to everyone, so I'm going to limit it to the aggro colors.
Yes, I want it to be mono red, mono white, or red white can partner with this commander. And it can partner with any of them that are those colors.
Does it have to be have partner, or it can...
No, it can just partner with any existing. So Tajik could get this, right?
Partner with a red slash and or white
or
legend.
It's almost like you have to word it like partner with a non-green, black, or blue legendary creature.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then it sits in your command zone, and it just has an eminence ability, and all it says is the first player to deal combat damage to another player becomes the Monarch. That's it. It just guarantees the Monarch is in the game, and you can turn your deck into the aggro deck that knows that Monarch is going to exist in that game.
I like that you're limiting it to red and white, because if this was, say, a land... I think that you might play that land in your Thrasios deck.
Yeah,
and
just because I have a two-drop.
You have a two-drop, and you're not trying to be aggressive. You're just trying to poke someone with Thrasios and then block with your 1/3 and then just kind of draw a few extra cards.
Yeah, Rhys the Redeemed is another one. It's a one-drop commander. It doesn't need the help of Monarch, and yet it would naturally run a card if it could, because it's likely to have its commander out almost guaranteed before anybody else and get a free swing.
But like Isimaru or something like that would really, one mana Zergo, those real aggressive creatures would really need the Monarch to be viable.
Yeah, if they did, I mean, think of how much better those decks get just immediately.
They would. Here's the thing, they wouldn't become broken. They'd just be able to finally hang.
I'm still not scared of them, but they're better.
I'm still not scared of them either.
Yeah, but it helps them, right? Like, if somebody comes with a Kithian deck, sorry.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen that deck before, and you see it, and you're like, well, I'm not going to have to worry about that player. Like, that's just, sorry, but that's just what you think. But if the Monarch thing happened, you'd be like, okay, it's a little bit, like, I still don't have to worry a ton, but
they're going to be committing to the board, but they're still going to have 7 cards in hand.
Yeah.
And so when you board wipe, you're not taking them out of the game completely.
Yeah, it's not like I do one punch and they're out. I'm going to have to throw a couple punches at them, and that means that they have a much better chance.
Yeah. Okay. Also, I like that it doesn't necessarily accelerate their clock, because their clock is dictated on their mana curve,
right?
Not necessarily the amount of card advantage that they have. And so if we were to try to pump up the aggro by giving them sort of more damage, then, like, let's say that we multiplied the damage like we did with Burn or something like that, then it would increase their ability to take out one player. And I don't think we want that. We don't want them to be able to punch one player really well. We want them to stay in the game and play more Magic.
It will just create a situation where the aggro player is just going to very quickly take out one player, and that player is going to sit there, but the aggro player still won't win.
I don't think that's fun, yeah.
Yeah. You want them to take them out at the same rate they are now, but just have more oomph later in the game. Agreed. Where they don't just fall off around turn 10, where it's like, well, aggro player didn't win yet. They're never going to.
Yeah, and also, you don't take them out. You're just kind of like, yeah, you're controlled. You're fine.
Yeah. Okay. The next problem is related. It's that mono white and Boros, they kind of suck. I want to say something here, which is that mono red, I don't feel like, and when we started this podcast, you know, four years ago, mono red, I think, was closer to what mono white is now. It was still a little better, but it was pretty bad. But they've created a bunch of stuff for red over the last few years. Impulsive draw,
I love the impulsive draw that they've added, yeah.
Neheb is a really big one. That's ramp on your commander. They've really got red to the point where I feel like mono red is
I even like Grenzo, the one that gives you like a weird draw effect off of your opponents.
Felden decks are really good. Duretti Duretti's decks are really too. Good.
Yeah, there's
Kiki-Jiki decks are really good.
Kiki-Jiki's been around for a while.
I'm just saying, like you get like Tuk-Tuk and all kinds of like stuff where like that deck's actually pretty good.
I even like the red card draw out of Battle Bond where you're able to access your opponent's decks.
Yep.
And it's that impulsive draw off of your opponent's decks. That's amazing.
What's the new dragon, the new dinosaur that like plays all the cards off of your opponent's libraries? Urtai?
The Primal Surge, Spiral Storm or whatever like that.
Yeah, what's the name of that card?
It's on the screen right now. You can just look at it.
But some people listen to the podcast. Hold on. I'm going to look it up. Talk. Say something. Say something smart.
Okay. Well, I'm going to talk about a little bit about red in terms of card draw, because that's what we've been talking about.
Itali.
Okay. Itali is the right.
Primal Storm.
Urtai is the
yes, Esper I knew one. That was wrong as soon as the it came out of my one. Mouth.
But see, we've been talking about all this card draw, and that's actually good that they've moved into that space, because I think that some other card draw has moved out of our range. One thing that Josh and I were bemoaning a little while ago is that Wheel of Fortune is so expensive, and that used to be my go-to red card draw.
It's the best red card in the format.
It being so good.
But it's reserve list.
Yeah, it's reserve list, it's expensive, and it feels awkward suggesting, well, I need some more card draw on this. Oh, but did you put in this $100 card that's impossible to get? Oh, that feels bad.
Yeah.
And so now, though, we have Chandra's. There's card draw on Chandra's that are really good. And like we mentioned, all these other ways to do it, this impulsive card draw. And now they've kind of filled the gap as Wheel of Fortune and those wheel effects have kind of left being still very powerful, but not a necessity like it used to be.
Well, they moved a lot of that into blue.
Yeah.
Like blue needed it into Windfall.
I think back in the day, like you needed Wheel of Fortune in a mono red deck.
Oh, yeah.
Now I don't think you need it.
No, I think you'll be fine. Outpost Sieges and stuff like that have covered us in that area. So, but mono white still, it's like way behind the others now. Because think of it, mono blue, great. Mono green, great. Mono black, great. Mono red, pretty good. Mono white. Way behind. It's not even like in the race, really. And and Boros, as a result, because red's still the least powerful of the colors. So when you pair it with the least powerful color, they're just too far behind. So I think those two colors, I was going to say color pairs, but mono white's not a pair. They need some help. And
I think it'd be easy to help it too if we got the right kind of commander. Yeah. We don't have the right commander to really create a balanced Boros deck, because white has tons of answers and red actually has tons of answers too. If you think of some of the best removal, it is in white and red. It's really strong.
But there's nothing that guarantees you the things you need in commander, which is rampant card draw, and we always talk about.
Exactly.
If Neheb, I think, was just a Boros card, that would have been the best Boros commander, right? Because it's mana ramp.
I mean, it's not hard to be the best Boros commander.
True, because I'm sorry the Relas and the Gisellas and all that stuff. I know you people love those decks.
But here's the thing. They're powerful, but they still just do what Boros does, which is tons of damage.
Yeah. So I think impulsive draw, for those that don't know, is red sort of ability to exile the top card of either your library, and I think that could extend to your opponent's library, and then when it says, and you may play that card until end of turn, or you may cast that card until end of turn.
Exactly. So use it now.
Yeah, it has a downside of you don't get to hold it in your hand till next turn of the turn or the turn after that. You have to either cast it now or not, but at the same time, it does provide card advantage. It's a card that you have access to that, you know, is above and beyond the one card you draw per turn.
And I think white could start getting some good card draw, but it's not there. White's great at tutoring. Like, they tutor legends and stuff like that. White is the ability to get lands into your hand is pretty good. We just got a reprint of Land Tax, which is a very powerful card. But
that's card advantage, but it's not on a legendary creature and you're not guaranteed to get it. And for whatever reason, they've been very hesitant to give redundancy of some effects too white. So
like
land
Mentor of the Meek.
Mentor of the Meek. Something. Every time I see it, I'm like, why is there not more of this? They did Bygone Bishop, which is a little bit, but you have to cast them. It's not ETBs. And then white you makes a lot of tokens.
Still pay two.
Yeah. It just, white needs more. Either white needs more cards in the 99, like non-legendary cards that give it the ability to draw cards. Like more cards that say, like, if you gain life, pay one mana, draw a card, something like that. Or it needs a commander that will give it card draw or ramp, like Knight of the White Orchid. I guess that's a more in the 99 style. What if Land Tax was kind of on a legendary creature in some way?
I think that'd be a good card. I also think that white needs to rely a little bit less on artifacts. Mm. Like what you just described, if you gain a life, draw a card, that's Well of Lost Dreams.
That's Well of Lost Dreams, yeah.
And so you really have to dip into artifacts, which are vulnerable. And same thing with the mana ramp. Like you need to dip into those mana rocks, which some people say is a problem. And that's why Treasure Nabber was created, because they're like, well, mana rocks are running rampant. And so the reliance on artifacts to make white balanced means that it's almost always behind curve and it's almost always clunky, and you are always reaching for something that's just okay rather than having something that your color does well.
Yeah. All right. This is a big one. I think this is probably my biggest thing that, and it's the hardest to solve. But if I had one thing about the format, do I want to say that?
I'll say it. This is my one thing about the format.
Yeah.
I actually think it is. I think it's one of the biggest problems.
Yeah. And I hope they can solve this, because as I was trying to tackle it, I was like, dang, this is really hard to solve.
I hope they solve it in an elegant way, because we kind of clumsily tried to solve it, I think.
It's hard.
Yeah.
So the problem is that green's land-based ramp is too good. So
Their mana dorks are fine.
We're talking about specifically cards like Rampant Growth, cards like Kodama's Reach, Cultivate, Skyshard Claim, all those cards that put lands directly into play. Green's really, besides
Burgeoning and Exploration, too.
Yep. Green's really the only color that does this besides like Knight of the White Orchid and a couple others. But green has the market cornered on putting lands into play so that you have more lands than your land per turn would allow. And the problem here is that mass land destruction is frowned upon in the format. So the social contract kind of gets rid of the natural checks and balances that Magic has put on this stuff.
Yeah.
And so the green deck just has way more mana than everybody else. And the other colors just don't have a tool at their disposal to even it out, really. I mean,
like if you're ramping like crazy in artifacts, that's actually a limited thing that can get taken out all the time. There's ways to bounce it. We have board wipes that wipe away all of the artifacts, like Vandal Blast them away, and then suddenly your mana base is gone, and no one bats an eye. Everyone's totally fine with that, but as soon as you mess with their lands,
it's somehow like bad. Just if you've ever played a green deck that's playing Rampant Growths and Cultivates, and you compare your mindset when you're doing that to your mindset when you're playing a non-green deck and you're playing Signets and things like that, you know that in the green deck, you feel 100% safe. I'm going to do this. My lands are going to be there, and that's it. I'm ramped. And I've done that for the entirety of the game. And in the other deck with the rocks, you're like, this is good, but it could all go horribly wrong.
I mean, I better use it now because this is not going to be around forever.
I mean, I could definitely get, you know, I could definitely get my legs cut off here at any moment. So, yes, I have a sweet opener that went, you know, Sol Ring into Signet, into some kind of monolith, and it's looking great. But, man, I could really, really get blown out. Whereas if you have an equivalent green start, you're like, I'm golden. Yeah. I have five lands in play. Everybody else has two. Okay, you can't really do that. I've got seven. Everybody else has four. That's just an advantage I'm going to keep.
I totally agree. And also, sometimes the ability to put multiple lands into play isn't as punishable with the card pool that we have. So if you put two forests on the battlefield, you've generated two lands, and there's not a lot of things that will easily, incidentally take out those two lands.
Yeah.
Whereas Acidic Slimes and Restoration... Nope. What's the
Acidic Slime will take out lands, but...
I know, but people don't. And if they do, they only take out one.
Yeah.
Whereas your mana rock, the equivalent four mana rock, that one target suddenly affects two of your mana.
Yeah.
So you pay four mana in green and you get two lands that are somehow even more protected because there's two objects versus the same four mana rock.
Thrawn Dynamo, which somebody might take
out. Exactly, yeah. which is a single target that is more susceptible to the removal that exists in the format.
Yeah, that's
a
really
good point. Do you ever use acidic slime on a land? If you do, it might be one that taps for more than one mana.
It's, I mean, yes, but it's a crazy land.
Yeah. Like,
it's Maze of Ith, it's Glacial Chasm, it's... No, do I use it on a basic forest? No.
But that's what they got. But do you use it on Thrand Dynamo?
Yeah, that's for sure.
I do too.
Just depends. Grim Monolith or something like that, more likely. But yes, I use it on something that... Basalt Monolith, like that card's scary. So you're like, boom, gone. Yeah. And you one for one them. Actually, you two for one them because you still have the Acidic Slime and you're probably going to... Yeah, it's a really good point. Okay, so here we tried to figure out a way.
Okay, I actually came up... This is a real card again.
Yes.
Gift of Estates is one and a white for a sorcery. If an opponent controls more lands than you, search your library for up to three Plains cards, reveal them, and put them into your hand, then shuffle your library.
This is land tax a little bit too, right? White has a suite of cards that sort of says, if somebody's got more lands than you, you can try to even the scales a little bit, but they always go into your hand.
Just imagine if this went into play.
Yeah.
Then we were talking about white needing this ability to mana ramp. So I made a different card that tweaks it a little bit, that kind of takes Gift of Estates and this idea of green-based ramp.
This is your best card name it's of all of them.
Huge.
Tracts of land.
Tracts of land. Huge tracts of land. Mana cost, who cares? Okay. If an opponent would have a land enter the battlefield except the first one each turn, then you may search your library for a basic land card and put it onto the battlefield tapped.
An opponent would have a land into the battlefield, except I like this a lot, actually.
So this is the same wording on things like Notion Thief and the one if they would draw more than one card a turn.
Yes.
Instead, if you play more than one land per turn, then you're like, oh, I'll do that too.
Yep. I really like that. I would almost rename it to, or reword it to...
You would not rename this.
No, not rename it. Sorry. I would reword it to... I guess, would this work on burgeoning on somebody else's turn?
No, because it says each turn. So actually, it gets burgeoning gets around it.
Maybe if you said except for the first land on their turn,
now that could work then.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm okay with it dodging burgeoning if it literally hits card. Every other stuff. But yeah, you're right.
I like this. I almost wish it was an artifact, so that other colors would have access to it.
Yeah, it could be an artifact, or one thing that's really tricky is the mana cost, because this is a very powerful effect, but you want it to be low enough CMC to be able to hit other people's ramp.
But it's not powerful.
You're right, actually, it's very narrow.
It's super narrow, right? So it could be one or two mana, because it could do nothing.
It could literally do nothing.
Yeah, it could do, like, for here's one minute, a question.
Would you play this card?
That's what I was just going to ask you. Would you play this card?
In white, I would.
So you'd have to do... My brain's trying to do a bunch of data.
Actually, in red, I would too.
My brain's trying to pull a bunch of data on, like, in your average game, how much does this happen? And how often do you run into a game where nobody plays a Rampant Growth or Cultivate? And it definitely happens. It's just when...
And when you draw this, too.
It's an interesting card. It's a good design. I'm not sure I would put it into any decks just because it's going to be dead sometimes. Mm-hmm. And definitely, you name white. White can't afford to have dead cards. Blue can. Because it draws a ton of cards. You know? That's the problem. Yeah. Yep. Oh, that's really interesting. But I do like the design. I like the idea.
One thing that I also like is that if we ever pitch a card and it's like, oh, it's an auto-include in every deck, we might not have done our job right.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
so
true.
Some of these cards that we've mentioned, we're trying to find that balance of, well, is it good enough? Maybe.
Would you play it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me if you'd play this. I think.
To me, this is a big enough problem that I would be fine with it being... The answer being prolific to the point where, like, the green players would have to start thinking, like, I want to run Rampant Growth, or would I rather run, like, one of these Enchantland things or a Mana Dork, because it's become prevalent enough out there to punish that.
And actually, that's what you did, is that you went the punish. I went the I want to piggyback off of your ramp, and you went sort of the more punishing route.
Right. So I didn't actually come up with any good wording, but what I wanted to do was punish the land ramp in the way that Vandal Blast or Nev's Disc, that kind of stuff, punishes everyone else when they do their ramp. Something that makes a green player down card advantage when you do it, not just catch up to them. And there's different white cards that kind of do what you're saying. There's some balance type effects that kind of put everybody to the same amount of lands.
Yep.
That's... I just want it to be more like Vandal Blast. I want it to be where... Well, like I said... I want the green, whatever the effect is, I want the green player to be like, when they're deck building, do I want Cultivate? do I want explosive vegetation? It's not just like brainlessly, yep, because it's always good and it's awesome. I make a token deck, Cultivate goes in it. I make a control deck, Cultivate goes in it. Combo deck, you know, like.
Yeah. Are you looking for a static effect that hits every single land drop that's more than one? Or are you thinking about a gotcha where you ramped and then instead you had to sacrifice two lands?
Yeah, something like that. I think so.
So you want like a one-off effect where... You want a static effect where they just can't ramp?
Yeah, I think one-off. Vandal Blast. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Basically it's like if more than one land enter the battlefield this turn, you know, its opponent instead sacrifices that many lands or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know how to word it. I was thinking like, yeah, you would... Something that would be like, you know, if it's turn seven and somebody has eight or more lands, then they have to... sacrifice those extra lands or something, but you can't template a card like that. It's just it's a weird thing, but something that just says, yep, all that mana and time you spent, you go back to even.
Yeah, that's an interesting effect.
Yeah, I don't know.
But the point is that this is a problem that I think is the most important problem in Commander.
Yeah, it's just a lot of it's the social contract and the way that that's set up, and green land-based stuff is just a loophole. It feels like a loophole in the rules.
And I don't think that some of the tools that they give us are like a non-basic land destruction. Like Wave of Vitriol was printed kind of to try to solve this kind of thing. For a while, they were going to try to control the non-basic lands a little bit. And I don't actually think that's the answer, because I don't want to punish people trying to do interesting strategies with lots of colors. I just want to punish the person trying to ramp ahead, just like you would punish my artifact ramp.
Yeah, I want to punish the player that spends their first five turns just putting extra lands into play, because the format, like we said, aggro's not that good, and that's the way you would normally punish it. But if I play aggro, I'm going to beat that player and then lose to everybody else.
You're totally right. Yeah, like you, in other formats, you can't afford to do that.
Right.
Or you have to jump through a lot of hoops to do it. But in this one, because aggro doesn't balance it out, you're free to do whatever you want. Yeah.
All right. Okay. There's one more problem that we have on our list. And this is one I put down, and it's that all the top tier decks in the format, all the CEDH decks are combo decks. It feels like the format needs a way to punish infinite combos, make them less viable. I would like it if some of the more powerful decks in the format, something that was at least in contention, was not a combo deck.
So this is where I kind of disagree with you. I think that Stax decks are really, really powerful, and especially in CEDH, and they do punish combo. They feed on combo not being able to go off with their Stax effects, with their taxation effects.
What's the big Stax deck?
Based in blue.
But what is it? Because we know like Teferi, Chain Veil. We know like Breakfast Hulk. We know the Thrasios decks. We know... The Timna deck.
Timna
we
is
know.
Sort of a creature-based deck, though. One thing that is that,
but
that combos. You are right
we know Zerdoomsday.
Is that all of
we
these
know.
End up winning through combo.
Yeah.
There are a few decks. I know one that runs that actually runs Keranos, and Keranos is one of the only win conditions, that it's such a Staxy deck that it shuts everything down, and then Keranos will eventually win.
I think, but it's still probably combos out, right?
Again, we're not CEDH experts.
I don't know the Keranos tier one deck, but I'll take your word for it.
But it might not, the current version might not be Keranos, but Stax is a real thing.
Yeah, and I think Stax decks are very good, but I guess I just, when I look at the top tiers and I, you know, at the top tables at the Commander Championship, I don't believe there was a Stax deck in that. Mm-hmm. Those were all combos. And I guess Edgar combos, right? Edgar's the one that won. I'm pretty sure it does. Well, here's the thing. My feeling is that regardless of if there's like one or two other sort of decks that sometimes make it in there, in other formats, combo is like a viable archetype, but it's not dominant to the point.
It's a tiny part of the archetype. In standard, you have to try real hard to combo.
This is the inverse of burn, because combo doesn't care how many opponents you have. It's doing something infinite amount of times. Burn is very much caring about the number of opponents you have, because it can only reach a certain amount, but it can do that sort of very quickly. So what I'd like to do is, you know, we're bumping up burn. I would like to nerf combo a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I came up with a card. Here we go. This is just an idea, okay? It's got split second. It says any opponent who has cast a spell with the same name or activated an ability with the same name, I don't know how you say that about an ability, but at least 10 times this turn immediately loses the game.
or the same, basically the same trigger goes on the stack. Something goes on the stack if the same thing goes on the stack or something like that.
Yeah, if they loop something 10 times, they lose. Instead of winning, they lose.
That's very cool. Are there combos that get around this? I mean, no, I wouldn't. But yeah.
I mean, there's probably combos that don't. That's interesting. Does like the Chain Veil is an activated ability, the Teferi Chain Veil.
Ones that will give you an extra turn that will get around this card.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're cast on different.
Exactly, because it's going to be on different turns.
Yeah, I was thinking like Breakfast Hulk type combos where it's like you're not casting the same card, reanimating it. So you could still do it.
So it's that reanimate ability that does
Revelark, Karmic Guide type combos probably still work because you're not casting. You're in some infinite loops. I mean, you could rename it.
Things like Aristocrats that just like you sacrifice, like you're using that sacrifice outlet like 40 times.
Yeah.
You still want to like punish those kinds of things?
No, maybe that's fine. Maybe I'm saying this doesn't.
We need to word it in a certain way that does that.
This doesn't stop this. Well, there's an activated ability. I guess so. I guess I would be fine with something that just sort of. I don't want to limit infinite combos all the time. I just want them to have to go like, that player has one in a wide open or whatever it costs, you know? And yeah. It's like, do I go for it? Because if I don't, if they have it, I'm going to lose.
That's interesting. Yeah. I like the ability. I like the idea of being able to attack limited spells, but also limited activated abilities. Like maybe a trick bind with storm, almost like a fluster storm effect, but one that counters these activated abilities and maybe even prevents them from being cast, almost like a silence effect too. Could be kind of cool.
I know the Commandrin guys, or at least Phil DeLuca in their playgroup. I don't know if they do this anymore, but for a while they kind of had a house rule that was like any demonstrated loop.
Yeah,
you could only do it five times.
Yeah.
And then so you can still get value and you can still do stuff, but you're not just going to infinitely kiki jiki.
See, I don't like that. I think it punishes those effects and you find the right five things, but then all the other ones that give you tiny bits of value just are unplayable.
What do you mean?
Like if you, let's say for example, you're getting 1/1 bats and you could get 10 1/1 bats. They might limit the loop to five times. Whereas if you're taking an extra turn or, you know, copying multiple spells, some huge effect, it's punished in the same way.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Creating a 1/1 bat versus, you know, getting an extra combat step are treated the same way in that scenario.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't saying holding that up as like the paragon of the exact solution.
But what you're saying is that some people find it enough of a problem to say, look, we need a house rule to answer it rather than having a card to answer it. Actually, house rules to answer things are a good idea.
Yeah, and I think you can house rule a lot of this stuff, but it does make it difficult. And I'm kind of like, I can't house rule stuff in my playgroup. Like, that doesn't make sense because what are we talking? Then we're not talking about Commander on our show. We're talking about a subset of Commander, right? And there's a lot of people like, you're going to go to a GP and play, or you're going to play with people that you've never played with before, and your decks are going to be super skewed towards a house rule that doesn't exist in the real world. And so, yes, it's always nice to say the thing, like, you could just house rule that. That solves everything. But it's not viable for a lot of people, not just content creators. I just think a lot of people, even before I was making content for Commander, I wouldn't want to do house rules because it's like training wheels, or, listen, that's disparaging. It's not like training wheels, but it is like, I'm not playing exactly Commander anymore.
You're narrowing everything and then saying that if you want to play with me, you have to also narrow your deck.
Or otherwise, I got to take my deck out into the wild and it's built for a different environment than, you know, than regular Commander. And so
clearly it's a weird balance to try to figure this out because, like you said, people try to blanket statement, just house rule. If you don't like it, then your friends don't play it. That's fine. But a lot of times you're dealing with a lot of different people. And you're right. If you were to sit down across the table from Jimmy and you decided not to use a Sol Ring, that's cool. But your play experiences are so much more diverse. And yours probably are too, listener. You probably go to different game stores and see different people and play lots of different Commander.
Or you don't now, but at some point in the future, you know, somebody moves away, somebody comes into your playgroup that wasn't there before, or you move away, or you meet some new people that play, or all kinds of things can happen where all of a sudden, I don't know, it's just a lot easier and safer to go with the normal rules.
And that kind of sums up a lot of this whole thing that we're talking about is we find these issues and it could be easy to ban it. And by the way, a house rule is kind of like a ban. You know what I mean?
For sure. I mean,
that's
Phil basically banned infinite combos in his play.
Yeah, that seems like the way out that you might be forced to, but hopefully we now get more answers. Maybe if there's enough answers for combo, they might, maybe the commander guys might open it up and say, okay, combo's fine now, I can deal with it.
Yeah, or at least the combo player, it's kind of like the green player. I just want the combo player to have to like think about it and worry about it. And they do in some cases, like they don't want to just play into blue mana or whatever sometimes, or they have to hold up their counter spells. And I'm sure a lot of combo players, that's why I wanted to give it split second and make it harder to interact with. But yeah. I'm just saying, like, I believe that combo is probably a little too strong in the format and it could use a nerf, but I'm not exactly sure how exactly to nerf it. And this just demonstrates how tough of a job R&D has designing cards for our format. They're trying to plug holes, but how do you do it in an elegant way that doesn't create more problems than it solves?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. We wanted to just really quickly touch on some other things that would be cool, but we don't have to expand on that, you know, we think are missing. And this is by no means comprehensive, but
these were cards that we kind of came up with and thought about, but then we felt that it didn't really deserve an entire category for it.
Yeah, like it'd be cool, we've mentioned this before, to have like a cycling commander.
And also, we just got energy. It would be really cool to be able to play, expand that theme and play with more of those cards. Right now, it feels really limited.
Yeah, something that deals with energy. It doesn't even have to say energy specifically, but just kind of takes advantage of that kind of mechanic.
Yeah.
A spider legendary creature.
Josh, we just got a spider legendary.
Thantis, why? That's what I wrote down here. Thantis, why? Literally, if Thantis just said, your spiders you control get +2/+2, it would have been more exciting, right?
Josh is, but actually one thing that I mentioned before is I actually want a few more changelings. And I think that that could support a lot of different archetypes and a lot of different
and fill in like your ninjas like decks that. And your, it would actually be like filler for all the tribes that don't quite have enough. Like some tribes, there's like, I would want to build that deck, but there are only 16 playable
balancing
cards in
that tribe. Be hard.
Yeah.
It will be actually hard. But I mean, mirror entity.
The
is,
one that pumps all of the stuff
and turns things into whatever creature. That's an amazing card.
There's
it's
conspiracy.
Really fun.
There's arcane adaptation too that change all your stuff into creature type. That's a way to get around it.
More of that is cool. I like that.
And then I thought and Animark, you can kind of do this, but I thought a morph slash manifest legendary creature. Would
People
be
get
cool.
afraid of Animar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Animar's too good.
It's too good. They get
like on his normal
out.
Strategy. So because Morph Animar is like a strong deck, but not broken.
Yeah.
Animar used to be like a tier one deck. It's probably like tier two now. But I would like a Morph Manifest, something that interacts with that. Because those mechanics are very cool.
They are really cool. Do you know what I want that you reminded me of? I want more Split Second too.
Oh, yeah.
That could be cool too. How about Split we just make more cards for us? That's just it.
Split Second is a very good commander mechanic, especially in non-blue, because it gives a way around counterspells, and counterspells are another thing I think are probably just a little too strong in the format. It's not quite to the level of green ramp, but blue is the only color that can deal with everything.
Yeah.
Because it can deal with it before it hits the table. It's the only color that can really stop a lot of combos. Like I said, blue doesn't need an answer to Cyclonic Rift. It's the only color that really doesn't care about Cyclonic Rift.
Here, have a swan.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay. To the listeners, I bet you can't guess what the two of the listeners' question is for this episode. What do you think our format needs? What cards would you design for Commander to kind of balance out some of the problems that you see? What other problems you see? Basically, what would you add to our list?
We're going to have a lot of cards in the comments below, aren't we?
You should go to that website that lets you, you know, make the fake cards and post them into the comments. Can you do that on YouTube? You can put pictures in there, right? I don't know.
I'm really sure you can't, because wouldn't you see a bunch of pictures all the time?
Wouldn't you see memes constantly?
Yeah, so
really
no, I'm okay. positive you can.
Tweet those at us instead, or you can Facebook them to us as well. And then if you want to buy real cards that actually exist, not the cards that you've designed, and some of the things you probably want, like the Teferi's protections and certain things like that.
Yeah, we talked about some cards that already do these things, the Gift of Estates that kind of does it halfway. You talked about Split Second, you can get a sudden spoiling.
Yeah, if you really want to be sad, you can get Ulrich of the Crawlin Horde. And you can get all these things by going to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That's our affiliate link. If you use that when you order your Magic product, singles, whatever, you really are making sure this podcast and game nights and all of our content continues to happen. We super appreciate it. And while you're there, you should check out Ultra Pro products as well. It doesn't have to be at Card Kingdom. It can be at your LGS or at any other online retailer. Ultra Pro really does make some of the best stuff on the market. The Eclipse sleeves, all my decks are in Eclipse sleeves. I finally switched them all over and I couldn't be happier. They got the great shuffle feel and they basically never break open. I've used the same Eclipse sleeves for like drafts, I don't know, for like 8 months or something, like a long time. Wow. Number of pre-releases. So I really do think Eclipses are great. You should check them out. Okay. Now it's time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside of the world of Magic. I have something cool.
You do.
Rome, the city in Italy.
The city. Have you heard of it? It's this city.
The eternal city, as they say. So I was just in Rome, and it was my second time there. DJ, you've been. If people don't know, DJ, you...
I studied in, I did a year of college in London, and actually my wife did the same year in Florence, and so...
Oh, Florence is great too.
I know, Florence is great too. But I had a chance to travel around in college. If you are in college and have an opportunity to study abroad, you should do that.
If you're in life and you have the opportunity to go abroad, you should do that.
That's true.
Rome specifically, I would recommend as a destination for a number of reasons. A, the food. Rome, Italy in general... The food is ridiculous, and Rome has like the gathering of all the different regions available there. And so that was actually the thing about Rome that was the hardest, was like, how many meals do we have here? Okay, well, we have to get X, you know, I got to find the best gelato. We got to get the best pizza we can find. We have to get some lobster linguine. We got to get beefsteak Florentine.
You ever sit in the afternoon Fiorentine. And just enjoy like a cappuccino or espresso or something like that? You just kind
of
sit.
Sit in one of the piazzas and just,
I just want to sit or drink coffee.
At night, you just drink a bottle of wine and wander into. And the thing about, the second cool thing about Rome is anywhere you go, you're about to turn the corner and something from 2,500 years ago will be there. Like the Colosseum will be there, or the Pantheon, or...
The Forum.
See, the Vatican, the Forum. The Vatican's not 2,500 years old, but some but the, of that, a the lot Vatican of that is stuff is.
Filled with, it's crazy. There's so much history there. There's so many interesting things to see.
Yeah, and I love history. I've talked about my favorite podcast, Hardcore History, so many times.
Yeah.
So Rome has as much history as any place on the planet. It's really, really a fascinating place. And it's actually an easy place to travel to because basically everybody speaks English. Like, here's the thing. If you're going east, if you're going Japan, you're going to China, you're going Vietnam, you know, a lot of those places I have been to, those places are great. But the preparation you need to go there is a lot more because there's not as much English and you can't, like, read signs in those places if you're from the West.
Yeah.
And so if you're in Italy, most people speak English. And if they say, like, find this street, you can read the signs because it's still in our same alphabet. And
do you want to know a trick in Eastern countries that my students told me?
Hook
it's ask someone young, because everyone young has learned English, but everyone older, it's like, no, they never even took English in high school or whatever like that.
But if you're like, where is this? And they tell you, this is the street, go down here. You can't read the signs.
Like
so
in Thai.
So you're like, I don't know what street this is because that sign is in, you know, a language that I cannot read.
Yeah.
That's the good thing about Europe. If this is, of course, from the American and the Western perspective.
Yeah.
But Italy and Rome in general, I just can't. It's also, here's another good thing about Rome. Super easy to get around. Their subway system is totally simple and easy to figure out and cheap. And I don't know. I'm gushing about Rome. I really love it there.
It's a great city. It really is.
It's awesome. So
I like how we're this is a really easy end step where we're like, hey, go to this beautiful place that everyone loves. mine is spend a year traveling. Like, here's this travel, go outside and travel wherever you want. By the way, this is actually good advice. You guys, but I think overall, it's like sometimes you can be afraid to like step out because it costs a lot of money. It isn't super intimidating to do this kind of stuff. And I think that pushing yourself to do cool things like that, especially, you know, our demographic, I'm assuming, is pretty young, you know? And so, you know, if you are inspired by, you know what, I should go to Rome. That is awesome. If one of you is like, I'm going to go travel and see some stuff that I didn't see before, then you were successful in your end step.
For sure. For sure. Travel is great. I don't know. I loved it.
It really is. I actually honestly think it is. It like broadens our perspectives and makes us better people.
Whoa, 100%. I think like looking at things from, you know, a different place, a different time, a different perspective, seeing it through somebody else's eyes, it just rounds you out as a person, and travel's a way to do that. I think reading books is a way to do that. That's another thing you and I both really enjoy. So yeah, if there's even a single person out there who's on the fence, or, you know, it's scary, like you said, but let me assure you, there are places that are easier to travel to than others. And Rome and Italy in general is a pretty easy place for somebody from at least the Western, you know, the Western world, as we call it, from the States and Canada and the places that most of you listen to from. I would highly recommend that as a destination, and definitely eat a lot of gelato while you're there.
If you're a listener in Rome, you need to leave a comment in the comments.
I actually had tweeted out, like, what's the best gelato? And I got people that, like, used to live there or currently did. And we, like, wandered, like, I walked, like, 15 minutes to this place that everyone said was, like, the best.
And it was, the verdict like, was?
Come il latte or something. Oh, and it was really good gelato. It was the best I've ever had. But
we can always trust you guys.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not enough of an authority to say it's the best in Rome, but according to some people, it was. And from what I've had there, it was. So, yes. Okay.
That was a long end step.
Yeah. I'm trying to find my place here. All right. The Masters of Modern, our sister podcast. Alice Kessler, Ben Bateman. They talk about the modern format and all things competitive Magic. They just launched a Kickstarter for... if you didn't know, Alex Kessler runs his own toy company. It's called Kesco. Ben Bateman works there also. Craig Blanchett, friend of the show, also works at Kesco. And they have a new game called Battle Bosses. Kessler was on our show, I want to say a month and a half ago or so, talking about this. And they finally did launch their Kickstarter. So if you want to check out that game, it looks really cool. I haven't actually had a chance to play it yet. But Kessler's a big Magic player, and there's a lot of similarities. You know, not exactly, but he's taken inspiration from Magic, of course, because it's his favorite game. So I would imagine it appeals to Magic players. So we'll put that Kickstarter information in the show notes. And you should go check out the Masters of Modern at collective.company right next to us.
Awesome. Our editor is Josh Murphy.
All right, Murph.
Yeah, special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the Living Card animations at Living Cards MTG.
He did that daze back there. D-A-Z-E, not D-A-Y-S. Okay, I'm getting a little loopy because, like I said, I just got back from Rome and I'm jet-lagged. Okay, everybody, thanks for listening.
Bye, guys.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter @JF Wong and @Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.